I have some additional items on.
Quick, grab a little basket. Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. It is November 20th, 2019, and you are welcome to the Town Council of the Town of Kiwi Beach. We have the invocation and pledge of allegiance will be handled by Gail Tabor.
Pray with me, y'all. Wise and loving God, we begin by offering you our thanks in this season of Thanksgiving, thanking you for your abundant blessings, especially for the blessing of living in such a beautiful place and among our amazing neighbors. Thank you for the life, for life itself, and for our measure of health, for the health that we need to fulfill our calling, for sustenance and for friendship. And we thank you for the ability to be involved in useful work and for the honor of bearing appropriate responsibilities. Help us to always remember that by the very fact that we are human, we have more in common than we have differences. Tonight we pray for our mayor and for the various levels of town officials, and in particular for this assembled council. We thank you and ask you that you would graciously grant them wisdom to govern in amid this conflicting interest and the issues of our day, to give them a sense of welfare, of the true needs of our people, to give them a keen thirst for justice and righteousness, and a confidence in what is good and fitting. Give them the ability to work together in harmony, even when there is honest disagreement. And God, grant them personal peace in their lives and in joy in their task. We offer this in gratitude and in love, in reason and in compassion, as we work together for the betterment of our community. Amen.
Amen.
If you would rise and join me in the pledge.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Gail, thank you very much. Okay, let us begin, gentlemen. First is the approval of the consent agenda items. Do I have any recommended changes?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to remove number six, table that action until another meeting.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Any other changes recommended?
I will point out on item number five there, I don't want to change it, but I relayed to the MPO today that Ms. Sanders is the new rep to the team.
Okay, good. That's good. Good point. Okay, do I have a motion to accept the consent agenda as modified?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, item six is removed, and we will discuss it next time. Adoption of the agenda. Any changes to the agenda of record?
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion we adopt the agenda as presented.
Second. Any discussion?
Just on number one under old business, I'll be filling in for the chief on that discussion item.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion. Do you have
second.
A second?
I'll second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. Discussion and consideration of persons to address council. The first individual is Your Honor Rebecca Blackmore.
Lower the microphone as usual. I came tonight to say thank you. I came to say thank you for two groups and then to give you a compliment. So I'm pretty sure you're going to let me speak. You're not going to keep me off. On election day, I had the opportunity to be the chief judge down here at Curie Beach. And the police department, the chief and his officers were there at 5:15 in the morning to make sure that we got in safely, that we got in the door, and then checked on us through the day, make sure nothing was happening out of the ordinary. You know, we had the three uncontested elections, so it wasn't real crazy down there. People were pretty well paid, but had they not been, the chief and his officers were here. We did have one person who did not want to vote because they wanted more choices. They didn't, they said, oh, I'm not going to bother to vote because I don't have enough choices. But I thank you for that, Chief, and to your officers all through the day. We felt safe. And the folks that came in to vote, all residents of Curie Beach, complimented this facility. Many of them had never been in here before, hadn't seen it. They almost were awestruck when they came in and were so impressed with how nice it is in here. So good we had an election, they got to see it and use it. Lastly, I did not know when I planned to come and speak to you tonight and thank Nancy Avery for what she did for us on election day, that today was going to be her last day. I planned to come and tell you, hang on to her as long as you can. She's a jewel, she's wonderful, she's fantastic. She set everything up for us on election day, gave us coffee and a coffee maker and a microwave and a room and took me on a tour and showed me where we could be, what places we could use, and stayed available to help with anything. So I came to tell you she was a jewel and to hang on to her. But evidently, she has already gotten your permission to retire. So, and I know you are probably going to say more about that later.
Oh, I think we probably will.
So, thank you, and you can be proud of your facility and your people and what they do.
Thank you, Your Honor. Next would be Mo Lindquist.
I don't remember giving permission for Nancy to retire in the first part of it. A little teary-eyed here. Mayor Blazinski and members of council, first of all, I'd like to thank you for appointing me to the WMPO, Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Over the past 6 months, I've learned a lot about mobility, met some amazing people who are passionate about the greater New Hanover community. They have the foresight to plan for the future of a growing population who will need to move easily and safely through our county. Not only people who drive cars, but also people who walk, people who ride bicycles, and people who use other ways of active transportation. At the recommendation of the WMPO, I've attended the Carolina Beach Biked Advisory Committee and listened to their ideas of making Carolina Beach a safer community to travel through. On October 2nd, I was in Maine at Acadia National Park, and I took a picture on my phone of a safety bollard. You know, the little guy in this state, it's the law, you must stop for little guy pedestrian walking. And I posted it on my Facebook page and I said, why can't we have these in our town? I came back from that trip and I noticed that on Lake Park Boulevard, Carolina Beach had put in at every crosswalk exactly that same bollard. Not of my doing at all, but I was so pleasantly surprised.
So, earlier this month, I was also fortunate enough to attend the Bike Walk NC Summit in Winston-Salem. And even though the cost was $300 and I didn't really want to pay that money out of my pocket, I feel I'm kind of creative about finding the money. My mother's advice to me always was, where there's a will, there's a way. And I applied for a scholarship and got it at my age, can you believe it? And the connections that I made at that summit were invaluable. So I brought back a lot of that information for you. One of those connections was with Hannah Cockburn. She's the director of Integrated Mobility. It's the merger of bicycle, pedestrian, and public transportation divisions for NCDOT. Her focus is the intersection of active transportation, micro-mobility, and public transportation. So in my mind, because of 421, I've always had NCDOT as the boogeyman. But when Hannah Cockburn and I sat together at lunch and discussed the feng shui of her office, I realized NCDOT is just run by people like you and me. The same with Matsu. People like you and me run that. It's not the boogeyman. Towns like Charlotte, Winston-Salem, Durham, Raleigh are in the midst of planning for the future of transportation in their towns. And it's no longer just about the high and mighty automobile. If we want to plan for the future, now is the time to consider safe ways to allow men, women, and children to move through our town. I'm prejudiced because I have grandchildren on this island who live in Carolina Beach, and I want them to be able to get to my house safely on their bicycles. So let's just talk about the elephant in the room. 10 years ago, the East Coast Greenway had planned to connect Maine to Key West, and it came down through New Hanover County, came down, like, I think portions, maybe down to 17th Street might be completed by now. But then it runs down Carolina Beach Road, goes through Carolina Beach. The plan was to come through Curie Beach, hook onto the ferry, and over to Southport. Southport has signs stating East Coast Greenway. The Island Greenway in Carolina Beach is considered the link to the East Coast Greenway. In our town, it runs down Alabama and straight down 421 to the ferry. So I'm here tonight because I'm asking you to create a committee, whether sanctioned or ad hoc, that will look at safe ways of moving people through our town. And it could be, you know, Bike Path is not a good name in this town. Bike Path Advisory Committee could be something that it could be named. Integrated Mobility Committee could be what it's named. But it's what I'm supposed to do with a WMPO, which is to research and advise programs, projects, policies, and to safely create integrated mobility in our town. Society is changing, and we must be ready to re-socialize our thinking and accept and expect people on bikes, people on foot, because bicycling should be a normal activity. Thank you. Any questions?
Noma, I think what you're asking for is an ad hoc committee to be set up to take a look at these options.
Yes.
We are interested in options and financial solutions for them.
Absolutely.
So we will, as a council, we will talk about it. We normally don't solve that when the person comes forward for the addressing council, because it's not an agenda item, but we'll look at it.
Thank you very much.
You bet, Mo. Thank you. We also have Mr. Victor Blackburn from Bernard Robinson & Company to discuss the full year 2018 and 2019 financial audit for the town of Curie Beach. Welcome, Victor.
Thank you. I think a little presentation, there it goes, to kind of talk about the town. We're going to be looking at the net position or the fund balance of the town, and that really kind of explains the strength of the overall financial situation of the town. So the very first slide that you see here is the town of Curie Beach total net position of its governmental funds as well as the business type activity funds as of June 30th, 2017, 18, and 19. And as you can kind of see, the your town here has a very steady position over the 3 year period, both in total, but also both broken down by the governmental activities and business type activities. You can see that you had steady growth over 3 years, but you did dip down in 2018, and I just wanted to refresh the council. That was due to a restatement that was required by an adoption of the county standard. Without that adoption of the county standard and that restatement, which ultimately reduced net position for that 1 year, you would have seen a steady growth over that 3 year period. So I just wanted to point that out to you.
Thank you.
That, you know, 2018 was kind of an unusual year just due to that change in county position. The next one is a more detailed breakdown of the governmental activities. And again, you can see that, you know, it was a dip in 18, but I wanted to point out to you in the middle there, that little red section there, that it grew in 2018 significantly, reduced again in 2019, and that restricted net position was due to unspent bond funds that you received that was used to acquire and build the fire station and a couple other properties here in the town. So just because it was unspent at June 30, 2018, it's required by the county standard to be considered restricted. But you can see that you spent the money in 19, and as you can see, the blue part of that graph shot up because you did spend it on capital project funds that ultimately that falls into that investment in capital assets net of the related debt. So it was just really moving it from one pot to another pot between 18 and 19. The next one is the business type activities, and again you can see that you're fairly consistent. You see a growth in the red over the 3 year period, and that's your net assets. So that's your capital assets, your plant, your vehicles and stuff like that, which you expect to grow as more residents are needing the services and as you kind of replace some of your older equipment and positions there. But overall, again, overall, still a positive growth over the 3 year period. This one here is probably the most important one. This is the governmental fund, but it's the general fund balance. And this is what you kind of use for appropriations when you make budget decisions. As you can see, in last year, you had that big portion there that's in purple, and that relates to that restricted net position that we talked about earlier. Is if you can see, you know, you had a little over $3 million sitting in the fund balance last year. That's that unspent bond money that was sitting in the capital project fund that was ultimately spent in 2019. But the important thing here is the top portion there, that light blue, which is your unassigned, and you can see that, you know, it was $2.7 million in 17. It dipped down a little bit, almost, you know, a little less than $2.7 million in 18, but it's now back up to about $3.1 million. That's your unassigned fund balance. That is what the town could use in case of emergencies or unusual expenditures that you could kind of dip into to balance your budget as appropriated fund balances to address those unusual items if or when they come up. So again, you got to commend the town on having a nice little reserve there. The next one is a kind of a breakdown of kind of comparing your final budget to the actual amounts for the general fund. And you can see that, you know, overall you had a net change of about $361,000 that helped grow the fund balance to about almost $4.6 million. But what I wanted to point out to you, if you look at your revenues, you collected about a little over $500,000 more than what you originally budgeted to collect. A significant portion of that is the reimbursement of FEMA money for two hurricanes, I believe.
Primarily Florence.
Yeah. But that you received during the year that you didn't budget for because the federal government, you never know when you want to collect the money. But you know, your expenditures only, you know, you did have a favorable variance of almost $200,000. That means you were expecting to spend about $6.4 million, but you only spent about $6.1 million. So you were able to keep your expenditures in line, you know, where you didn't overspend there. But that really helped save you in your fund balance. You see in your original fund balance, original budget, you were planning on using fund balance of about $314,000. I think with that FEMA money coming in and some of the expenditures that you had to incur due to the hurricanes this year with salaries, overtime, and things like this, that kind of helped you not having to dip into your fund balance for the current year. The last slide is your enterprise fund, which is your water and sewers. And again, you can see that, you know, you plan to have a operating income going into it. You did have that. You had about, you know, $240,000, a little over $240,000. You had some non-operating revenues come in. But you still grew the net position for the enterprise fund about $300,000. Again, commend you on that. And that money is going to be, you know, hopefully be used to help replace water and sewer lines or vehicles, equipment mm-hmm. needed to supply the services to the residents. This concludes most of the slides, but I also wanted to point out to you that I believe you've had opportunity to read the financial statements. The opinion related to the financial statements was an unmodified opinion, just like you've received in previous mm-hmm. years. That's the cleanest opinion. You probably also noticed that you had another opinion, a compliance opinion this year, a compliance opinion under the government auditing standards. And that is some special testing that we had performed this year due to the amount of funding, federal funding that you received. If you received over $750,000, we're required to perform what's called a uniform guidance or a single audit. But anything over $100,000, between $100,000 and $750,000, the state of North Carolina requires a municipality to have what's called a government auditing standards. And that's just to look at significant laws and regulations and compliance with grant agreements or contracts that are associated with those federal and state grants that you receive. And so you see that opinion in this year because of the FEMA money that you did have come in. And it's considered an unmodified opinion too, it's clean. There was nothing that came to our attention in the way that you requested reimbursements from the federal government that would bring concern that we needed to bring to your attention.
Okay.
Also want to point out to you, there was a letter that's a required communication to those in charge of governance and kind of summarizes the audit. The things to point out there was that we did not have any audit adjustment entries, nor were there any past adjustments. Arlen and the town were ready for the audit. We didn't have any disagreements with them, nor delays. The lack of an internal control letter, because if you had internal control issues that were deemed to be a significant deficiency or material weakness, we were required to put that in writing. So the lack of that letter should let you know that nothing came to our attention in the design or the operational effectiveness of the town's internal controls as of June 30th, 2019, led us to believe that you had that you should be concerned of a significant deficiency or material weakness.
Okay.
Any questions I can address at this time?
Gentlemen. State mandates that we have to maintain a certain amount of money against our general fund, I guess. I'm not sure how to state that, actually, Arlen.
Yeah, I think that a recommendation is really more of a recommendation that they want you to have about 8%
right.
of your operating expenditures.
Right.
Your general.
Can you tell us where we stand against that?
Significantly more. I think that requirement was about
51.
For us, was about $490,000
yeah.
that we would have, and that's included in the one. On this one, it's under restricted state statute. So it's
okay.
The chart is the second from the bottom. So that tells you what we'd be required by the state to have as a.
Okay, so we meet or exceed that requirement.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And we also we have our own fund balance policy, which we're
yep.
also, which is more stringent than the state, which we're well within.
Right. I actually asked that question for the benefit of our citizens. Any questions from the floor, Craig?
You're looking at the variance. You know, typically you like to see variances plus or minus 5%, but you know we're up at 7% and 10% on variance. Is that typical for a town like Kira Beach because of the nature of hurricanes and that sort of thing, or is it something that you might kind of come up with some ideas on how to get a little bit better in terms of our forecasts?
Well, the significant variance, I'm assuming you're talking about the revenues.
Well, and expenses too. I mean, you have a plus or minus 7%, 10%, 11%.
Well, the expenses is really the state law basically tells you as a town that they don't care what your budget is, but you can't overspend your budget. So you don't want to have a negative variance related to the expenditures. And it also limits the available fund balance. So that appropriated fund balance, if you did not have such a large unassigned fund balance, you couldn't appropriate more than what you had in there. So that prevents the town from overspending money that they really don't have. That's really the two requirements. But in your situation, you have budget amendments throughout the year that will probably increase, because that's the final budget. But if you look at the financial statements, you'll see the beginning budget for the year, which is your initial budget, and then you see a final budget, so you can kind of gauge on what the adoptions were during the year of what budget increases were and where that money's coming from to increase the expenditures. So in your situation, it is, due to the hurricanes and stuff like that, it is going to be a little more difficult to budget exactly what you want to spend. You want to make sure that you budget enough so you're not overspending, because that's when you get a nice little nasty letter from the state asking why you overspent your adopted budget. So I think the towns more likely across the state of North Carolina are more conservative in making sure that they have enough money, especially at year end when your payables come in and things like this that you're not cutting the checks for, that they want to make sure there's enough reserve there so at the end of the day, when they record all their payables, they're not overspent. So it is a little difficult when you're trying to convert from what is called a modified cash, especially a cash basis, to kind of accrual basis, which is capturing certain payables and things that we get paid in July or August after year end. So it's a little more difficult for towns than you're thinking of a for-profit business and stuff like that. Does that answer your question?
I mean, at least it's been a favorable variance.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions, Van?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much, Victor. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nice job, Arlen, and financial team and department heads. You stayed within your budgets and did a very good job. And for getting your information in so quickly so that we were in line very early for the FEMA funding. That is critically important. And you've done a great job on that. I want to thank you. Okay, discussion and consideration of committee business. Community center. You want to make any announcements, Nikki, about the upcoming lights?
They have a lighted globe craft project coming up on the 30th. It's $2 with two cans. If you'd like to participate, you can contact the recreation office.
For $2 and two cans of vegetables or soup, you will get to make a beautiful globe lamp for your yard. Marketing committee? No comment. Shoreline access and beach protection? Nothing to report, Dennis? Thank you. Planning and zoning commission?
I think we have a separate agenda item.
We do?
Yeah.
All right. Proposed memorandum for P&Z commission? Yes, now you're on.
I'm sure everybody is aware of the recent state changes regarding city codes and planning and so forth, known as, I believe, Chapter 160D. And so the recommendation of PMZ is that that there's a recognition that we probably need to have our attorney Eldridge, spend a little more time than normal. Obviously, there's a cost associated with this. And so we wanted to make sure that this is brought before the town council for a discussion and ultimately approval to have us push forward on trying to get our code in conformity with Section 160D. And Attorney Eldridge is here to kind of explain a little bit more about this. Thanks.
Welcome, Attorney Eldridge.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk about the wisdom of the General Assembly. General Assembly, in the recent session, passed Session Law 2019-11, and to foreshadow the comprehensive nature of the project that needs to be undertaken, that session law is 128 pages long, and it consists of nothing but currently effective, and effective a year from now, revisions and complete rewrites of planning and development statutes, which for us would be essentially Chapter 19. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is the General Assembly has completely changed everything. Some of the significant changes are already effective and include third-party regulations or statutory provisions regulating third-party requests for downzone property, which I believe we dealt with one way or another recently in this town. I think we did a text amendment. We were ahead of the General Assembly
right.
on that one. Judicial review instead of the usual Board of Adjustment review for certain cases involving Chapter 19 zoning decisions. For as long as I've been an attorney, you would take somebody receiving an interpretation, a decision, or a Chapter 19 notice of violation, would take that directly to the Board of Adjustment. Current provisions now allow you to fast-track that right to Superior Court if it involves certain issues like constitutional questions or an allegation of a taking. So that's very significant. In addition, there are current provisions that award prevailing party the attorney's fees in cases involving cities. So at least you're on equal footing. If you win, you get the attorney's fees. If the other side wins, they get them. Those provisions, and that's just a thumbnail sketch, those provisions are currently effective now. A year from January will be a new chapter in 160. It's 160D. Right now, all of our actions for planning and development are under Chapter 160A. Well, what the General Assembly did, and it was a 5 to 7 year project, they took all the county planning and development statutes and all the municipal planning and development statutes and rewrote them and recodified them in a new chapter 160D. That chapter won't become effective until January 1, which is another indication, along with that 128-page session law, of the comprehensive nature of what we're looking at. Some other indications of that comprehensive nature are the fact that the School of Government is going to publish a book on this matter, that they're going to set up an informational website for the Chapter 160D, and that they're planning and implementing conferences and regional workshops, which I believe PCC, maybe some members of council, and our esteemed staff will be attending, as well as I, and that's in January, I think. So the bottom line is this. You've got a lot of changes, and to sum up the main point, quoting the School of Government, all city zoning, subdivision, and development regulations will need to be updated by January 1 to conform to the new law. That's from the School of Government. So you're looking at a comprehensive project that's going to take the course of several months, if not longer, where you, and this has not begun yet, because no one has green-lighted this task or instructed this task. And it's in what it will involve is reviewing that session law and figuring out what's effective now and figuring out what's going to be effective later, pulling out the code and determining what needs to be changed in that code, and then current to statute, Chapter 19, and practice, developing text amendments to conform our regulations to the new laws, planning a PCC review, and then council consideration and action. That's where we are. That's what needs to be done. And the way it's done these days is, as I've described, by statute and code, PCC council. It's a comprehensive project. That's the way it's done, but I'm requesting, on behalf of PCC, I'm requesting that we get some clear instruction to proceed as recommended, with the understanding that it is a comprehensive project, but I've not conferred with Mr. Canutis about this and need direction from you all before we go marching down that road. I think that's the most effective way to proceed, because that's what we've been doing every time we bring a text amendment to you. It would help PCC to be in the loop, and it would give you a finished product, and the town attorney would be reviewing that as it appears on your all's agendas. But just want to make sure that that's what council wants. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Just very quickly, P&Z discussed this, and we are quite aware of the comprehensive nature of, I think, the upcoming redesign and rewriting of our various codes. And so we're willing to take on that task along with Attorney Eldridge.
Okay. Are we planning on prioritizing? Did you look at our Chapter 19?
Well, there's three areas, I believe, that Attorney talked about that are actually implemented right now that we have to deal with right now. There's another issue that we had talked about earlier in terms of excluding certain uses that we also have to address within our code. Those are the first things that we're going to do. I think what we're going to do is attend the session that's going to be held in January, get maybe perhaps a clearer idea in terms of prioritizing the other sort of things. But all this has to be taken care of by January 1st of 2021.
And to follow up, we do have a significant set of changes that are currently effective that we need to cross-check the code with and bring text amendments forward to conform.
Okay.
And we want to do this in a comprehensive way rather than a piecemeal way, or else you're going to be seeing things every single month that, you know, so we certainly want to look at it in a comprehensive, wholesome way.
Council, you have any questions?
So, are you going to build a budget for this project, and we're going to manage it like a project? Because we're going to have to obviously change the budget for the P&Z attorney.
That's why we're here, is to get the guidance from you. You know, when we heard about this nature, is that the P&Z felt it was very important to get a green light from council as to how you want to approach this, because there is going to be a cost associated.
Right. So I think at least for myself, can you build a cost plan and bring it back to the December meeting so we can talk about how much we're talking about committing to?
You know, we were just talking about the variance. I mean, we can certainly come up with an estimate in terms of
right.
number of hours, mm-hmm. attorney fees that might be required. That this is going to be a big plus and minus in terms of.
No, we understand, but yeah. I mean,
council member,
I don't want to say yes without at least saying that I asked how much it was going to cost. I assume the rest of the council didn't either, right?
I've got a couple of points. One, has to be done regardless.
I understand.
And number two, very, very difficult, if not impossible, to forecast the cost for something that we haven't done yet. Don't know what we're going to find when we get into it. But anticipating that reasonable question and a reasonable need for that question, the more and more I think about it, I've been estimating 5 to 8 or 5 to 10 hours a month on the project.
Okay.
Oh, that's not too
bad. I would say that's a conservative estimate, too, because you know, I would probably 10 hours a month. give a little variance.
Well, that's fine. So you probably, I mean, I don't remember the budget for that line, but Arlen will tell us long before we get there. But it sounds like we won't get there until the first quarter sometime if you start doing 10 hours a month.
Cycles.
What?
It's going to be spread over two fiscal years.
Right.
But I assume you are starting in December, if we say yes.
Yeah.
But we won't, that line item will be fine until the end of quarter one before we need to do a budget amendment. Right. Okay, that's what I was asking.
Okay.
If you'd have said 100 hours a month, I'd have been a little concerned.
Yeah.
But I don't know, right? Well, okay. I don't have any other questions, sir.
No, I don't either.
John? Do they need consensus from council?
It will be a busy year for P&Z. Lanny's planned this. Mr. Young did resign. They're going to advertise immediately to get the alternate up there so that we can have that extra person so they can be brought up to speed as rapidly as possible with what the next 12 months will bring.
Well, we have a strong P&Z team. We have strong financial advice over the years relative to that P&Z team. We have to do this. The estimate seems reasonable. I would like a motion that says let's get started.
I'll make the motion that we start with the P&Z Commission to begin conforming the town code to recent and future comprehensive legislative amendments.
I'll second.
Okay, any other comments?
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Attorney Eldridge. Thank you, Craig. Discussion and consideration of department head business. Administration.
No,
Ms. Nancy, you have anything to say? Not right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Building inspection department, John.
Nothing, sir.
Okay. Finance department, Arlen.
Just so we had our what's called a recovery scoping meeting, so it's the initial kickoff meeting with FEMA in regard to Hurricane Dorian. So that process has now started. There's going to be a couple people here tomorrow to do site inspections along with either Jimmy or some other public work personnel at the damaged stormwater outfall. So the process has started.
Good. Okay.
And you've got all the information from the department heads you needed from that one, right?
We're still collecting or whatever. So
okay.
It's in progress.
Okay. Good.
Okay. Fire department. I think you're standing in for the chief, aren't you?
On the old business, not
on this
part.
Stuff? Okay.
Yeah.
Police Department, Chief Mike, Mr. Bowden.
I'll let him introduce our newest officer, Katie McGee, since she just happened to be in here.
Welcome, Katie.
Katie Griffith, sorry.
We do have one other thing, I think, to mention, and that is Officer Jamie King. I believe he received an award.
Yes, he did. I can't remember what it is.
I didn't mean to do that to you, Mike.
Yeah, he got an award from the DA for doing a great job on a sexual assault case.
Right.
The guy's in prison for a lot of years.
Much of our police force assisted in a sexual assault case in Pender County. And he was recognized by our DA for his professional work in apprehending, and this man has already been sentenced.
Yes, sir.
So, fine job by the police department. Public Works Department, Jim.
Just a couple quick updates. LDSI sent me an email today on their stormwater update. It's just basically saying how much they've had done on the inventory portion of the project. And Area B is approximately 90% completed right now. Area A is like 30% complete. So
you mean on the inventory aspect?
Yeah, just, yeah.
Okay.
What did I say?
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, the inventory. Also, they've begun the drainage analysis assessment of watersheds and all, and everything should be complete. They said hopefully, as far as the inventory part of it, by the middle of December. So that is, they're moving on with it pretty good, to be honest. Like I said, this is the only thing I got today from Jonathan. Yeah. He apologized for not being able to be here tonight and do a lot better job than what I'm doing. But
I see you just got it today, Jimmy, so if you would make sure we get a copy of that and tell them that we will expect them to have another report for each of our council meetings.
Oh, yes, sir.
All right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I talked to him, and we requested they come to the December meeting, but since we're moving it, I said I'll let him know tomorrow morning when it is. So hopefully he can be, or a representative from LDSI will be here at the December meeting.
Good.
And just one more thing, one more update on the water meter project. The water meter project is approximately 86% complete now. Out of 2,116 meters, there's been 1,687 meters installed. They're down to roughly around 430 meters, which is, they're saying they're about two and a half weeks ahead of schedule right now, which is really good. We did another meter run through the town, and out of 1,400 and some odd meters, only 11 did not read, which we determined was pretty much a GPS software issue. So it's coming along pretty good. But on the other hand, there's a couple of things here. On this one certain route of meters, between the software and personnel, there were like 20 inaccurate readings costed residents a higher water bill, which, you know, they actually did use the water, but me and Arlen worked together on this, and we pretty much come to a resolution for them. And so, yeah, other than that, that's pretty much it for me tonight.
So 20 all on one route?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Out of approximately 1,500 that were installed?
Yes.
That's pretty, that would take that percentage.
Yeah, about around 1% right. Of the town.
Okay, good. And we've made adjustments accordingly, I assume.
Yes.
Okay, good.
And, you know, there's still that some in progress in regards to investigating exact causes and
most of the people you've spoken to have an understanding. We have a picture of the end, and we know what the beginning was, so we know how much water was used.
Correct.
And then the billing is adjusted accordingly.
Correct.
I think in a very fair manner, actually.
It would take like an averaging approach over the last year so that it minimizes like a huge bill where they would go into higher rate tiers. So it actually
that particular, that would kind of exclude some of the levels, right? So, which would actually comes in as somewhat of a benefit, I would assume. Okay. Anything else, Jimmy?
Oh, no, sir. That's it.
But just for council, having been in this role a while, no one's happy when they get a bigger water bill. So if you get a call, 20 of our citizens out of 1,500 are unhappy right now with the new water meters, just right. For council's knowledge, in case you do get a call. And if you don't feel comfortable talking to them, please forward them my way. I'll be glad to talk to them about what we're doing and why.
Okay. Thank you, Jimmy. Recreation.
Thank you, sir. Just one quick announcement. The holiday market is the next two Saturdays, and it does have road closures involved with it on Atlantic Avenue between K&L, and working with Public Works and police to implement that. A note went out on the website today in Town News, and I will send a personal note to the downtown business owners to let them know. And we have almost 50 vendors this weekend, close to 40 next weekend, so hopefully we'll have a good fit.
Okay. Any questions for any department heads, gentlemen? Okay, moving on. Discussion and consideration of old business. $12,076.49 budget amendment to implement new ranking structure for fire department.
Yeah, so one, I can't stand in for the chief, but as the president of the board of directors for the volunteer department, I told him I'd be glad to talk about this issue. And I know you guys all talked about it at the last meeting, which I was not at. But I did read the notes. Ed also sent an email to all of council about why he thinks or he recommends that we do this effective January 1st instead of waiting for the budget cycle. Two of the key things are in there. One, on the volunteer side, we have a number of senior officers that will be retiring fairly soon. So Jim Dugan and Wayne Bostic are at a time when if they decide they could stop doing this. So he's using this rate structure on the volunteer side to get more leadership in the volunteer level. That's part of the point. The second point is on the paid side, Carolina Beach is putting up in December 3 engineer positions, which is one of the positions that he's working to move up into now, and that's what changes the budget on the paid side. Their pay rate will be higher than our engineer proposed pay rate. He's not really concerned about losses in the short term, but over the long term, he just wants to make sure that his department stays in line with them, because you don't really want to lose senior leadership positions. So I would make a motion that we make this effective January 1st and take the required budgetary impact out of the general fund. That's my motion.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have questions?
I understand what they're doing. I'm pleased with it. I think the timing's bad, being mid-budget. We haven't lost, we're not losing officers at the present time. I guess my concern is coming back with that huge increase mid-budget year. I would rather see us work through it at the budget, during the budget process.
Okay. Marlon, I got a question for you. We are moving some of the ocean rescue pay scale into essentially the ROT TDA funding, which is covered by the ROT taxes. How much is that content, do you know? How much is the content of that, do you know?
The whole amount will probably be about $30,000.
About $30,000? I think we kind of solved that problem.
Well, when we're doing that, we're just moving from one category to
right.
another a little bit, so in the current budget year anyway.
But that would be a refundable item, right? It was not refundable before, now it would be a refundable item.
Right, but I guess what we have to monitor is how much money we really have available from ROT.
Right.
You know, we can't necessarily increase what we expect to get beyond what we think is available.
Okay, I understand the point. There's an actual and a wanna.
Right.
Right, okay. We've been pretty good at balancing that, but okay.
Well, it has been growing, but I don't think it solves the problem, at least in the short term. I think when we do the budget, we'll see what happens, right? Arlen does a great job of forecasting that. I think it's hard to forecast how many people are going to rent rooms in Curie Beach, honestly. I think he does a really good job compared to the challenge, but I think for this one, it doesn't fix the issue. It's the general fund issue in the short term, right?
And I asked the question of, you know, is there other ways to minimize it? So we could do it half a year, we could do it a fourth of the year. I'm not opposed to what Ed's proposing to us at all. I just have trouble with taking the money out of fund balance mid-budget here, do it. Arlen, you want to talk about those budget amendments? Or?
Yeah, I actually put together two budget amendments. One is we have multiple options, but I think what we talked about last time was one, waiting until the next budget year. Two was making effective July 1st, or three was, I think, that there was another proposal, we'll make it April 1st, so just for one quarter in the current year. So I have put together two budget amendments, one if we went with January 1st, one if we went with April 1st. And in each case, is the offset to the expenses is a decrease in fund balance,
sure.
Appropriation of fund balance. Yep. And I calculate a little bit less than Ed's $12,000, it's like 11.
Well, I guess we can stress the fire department, or we can stress the director of finance here, I guess. So the only thing that I worry about is I'm very happy with both departments. I want to support the chief. And I think if we need to find a way to maintain a level of, you know, the level of morale and the capability of that group, that we may need to step up and get this thing done. John, you have an opinion?
Not any more than what's been said. I support the chief and his proposed.
John's the liaison to the fire department.
There you go.
And of course, we have many-year fireman here. Any comments?
I second the motion.
We have a motion and second. No more comments. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
Okay.
It's your first no vote.
Approve the budget amendment. I have that.
Yes. Actually, we should approve the budget amendment for the $12,000.
Well,
it's 11-something. Or 11-something.
11-9. And some of the reason it might be a little less is I didn't include an increase to like the drill pay line because looks like we have sufficient budget capacity there to begin with.
I trust your numbers over Ed's.
Mr. Mayor, for the record, I did discuss with Chief Kennedy and voiced my reasoning for how I felt about this, and he and I are on good terms. And
I know that he and I had the same discussion. I asked him to take half of it. He just can't. He was not able to do that, so I trust his judgment. We'll go with that. If I didn't trust him, I guess he wouldn't be chief.
Carolina Beach has been active and aggressive in advertising for their open positions across the social media.
So I make a motion to approve budget amendment 20-05 for $11,874.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Additional signage at crosswalks.
Nancy had a question. What was that, Nancy?
Yes,
ma'am.
Additional signage at crosswalks. Mr. Bowden. Word has it you'd rather give somebody a ticket than come up here and talk to us.
Absolutely. Myself and Mandy were tasked to look at crosswalk options. We came up with four with DOT's help. One of them being the cheapest one was roughly $2,400. We have six crosswalks that are marked. The most expensive was about $186,000 for all six. So the cheapest was about $400 for the little signs that go in the middle of the road.
Mm-hmm.
My interpretation from DOT is that mid-block crosswalks. and we only have two of those that meet the criteria. They're in between two roads. So it'll only be two crosswalks out of six we can fix. Another one is that sign would flash constantly 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I'm pretty sure the residents would like it. And it's not once the residents get used to it, they're not going to notice anybody in the crosswalk anymore.
What was the cost of that one? 28 grand?
That was
total cost all crosswalks or per crosswalk?
That one was 28,000 for six crosswalks.
Okay.
And the next one is about 45,000. That's the same thing that Carolina Beach has, push button crosswalk. There's actually a light on top of this one that at nighttime shines down into the crosswalk.
Mm-hmm.
Exact same thing Carolina Beach has. Again, there's a few problems with one of our crosswalks ends up in the middle of somebody's driveway. C-lane.
Okay.
Runs right to the driveway, so that one had to be fixed.
One last thing. I think, Mike, this cost is just the equipment. It's not the installation.
Right. We would still have to have it installed and maintained. So anything that breaks with it, we would have to maintain that as well. There's a couple other deals with the crosswalks. There's a few parking places, which I know parking is limited, mm-hmm. that our guys have a problem with. We're parking in front of crosswalks, very close to crosswalks. I have news bad because the median is about 20 feet behind the road, and it's hard to see people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people are not interested. The next one, this one's very expensive. It's $187,000. It's pretty much the same thing as the other one. It's push button as well, and there's a daisy chain of lights on each side of the crosswalk in the road. It takes about 2 days to install, and that's 2 days of somebody coming out installing. Police department directing traffic. Everybody else deals with that one. The next one, $185,000. That's a pedestal that sits on either side of the road and shoots a light across the road. I'm not sure how effective that is during the day, but it does flash pedestrian across. And those are the four options that we came up with.
Okay. It's quite a spread of cost, so.
But from the thing we have to pay for it, maintain it.
Thank you for the for doing the investigation. I appreciate it, Chief.
Sure. Thank you.
I guess we would have to take a look at optimally. Where would they be used if they would be worth the investment? When I say worth the investment, it's not that I'm not saying that pedestrians are not worth an investment. They certainly are. I do have the clear belief, though, personally, that the safest way to deal with distracted and impaired drivers and or impaired drivers is to look both ways. Nothing else is going to keep you totally safe. But I think we take this under advisement, team, do a little more investigating based on these four options and see if there's things that we can do, maybe a combination of them, maybe none of them, but I think it warrants a little bit of investigation. I think Mayor Pro Tem Hagler, that he had done some work on the studies at 35 miles an hour or...
Yeah, when we talked about this before, I just brought up some of the information about the pros and cons of crosswalks and crosswalk lighting and recognition, right? So there are multiple studies that show that in 35 mile an hour zones, crosswalks actually end up with more people getting hit in the crosswalks than crossing out of them. I don't know what the right answer is either. I'm sort of with you. I think that there are a number of citizens that ask council about this issue, so there are some citizens at least that believe pretty strongly in the signage, right? We had one that talked to us at the very beginning about how excited she was about the signs at Carolina mm-hmm. Beach. But I don't profess to be an expert on the issue. I just brought up studies and sent it to you guys to read because I thought it was interesting. I think maybe if we set up a pedestrian type committee, this is one of the things they can consider and talk to us about and really research. And then we could talk about it in the January, February retreat time frame and then decide as we're doing the budget where this makes it. And I mean, you can easily install this before the next season, right?
Yeah.
If we decide that's what we want to do. So that's kind of how I would lean on this one is, okay, let's have someone look at it. I'm not volunteering. and then have council talk about it at the budget. The department heads have done their job. Now we got to decide what we think. And we should probably get some citizen input on it.
Well, I agree with you, David. I think if we can, this might be the first item for a bike ped committee. It might be the first item on the agenda for our planning retreat.
Yeah.
Appreciate the work staff done. It's amazing what it costs.
Yeah.
And what you can really do and what the state doesn't do for you. So, I think we need to talk about this some more.
Well, we do need solutions, and we need financial solutions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, it's a lot of money towards the budget for that particular item. But, okay, so since we will be considering Mo's request, and we have some pretty good things to start with, we will readdress this and probably most concerned at the next meeting. You okay with that, gentlemen?
Yes.
All right. That will be tabled for the next meeting. Discussion and consideration of new business. Well, we have an appointment of a new town clerk replacing retiring town clerk Nancy Avery, effective December 1st. And we're going to do the oath of office tonight for that. And then I hope everybody sticks around because we're going to celebrate Ms. Avery a little bit in a room next door to us here. Mandy, would you step forward, please?
I make a motion to appointment Mandy as our new, I'm blanking on your last name, Mandy Sanders.
Sanders.
Sorry, it's been a long day. Appointment of, this makes it even easier. Motion to promote Mandy Sanders to the position of town clerk effective December 1st, 2019.
You got to read that out, or I'll read it. That's why I was going to read it. But
a salary of $65,000, I don't feel comfortable saying that.
I'll second it.
Put in the mic this time.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm never making a motion again. Motion to promote Mandy Sanders to the position of town clerk effective December 1st, 2019 at a salary of $65,000.
I'll second. Second.
So we have a motion, we're going to have a second.
Second.
A second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, Mandy, now it's going to be official. Place your hand on the Bible, please, and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Mandy Sanders.
Swear that I will support and maintain the Constitution and laws of the United States.
Swear that I will support and maintain the Constitution and laws of the United States.
And laws of North Carolina not inconsistent therewith.
And Constitution and laws of North Carolina not inconsistent therewith.
And I will faithfully discharge the duties of my office as town clerk.
And I will faithfully discharge the duties of my office as town clerk.
So help you God.
So help you God.
Congratulations, Mandy.
Reschedule the December organizational meeting from December 16th. So, gentlemen, we need to pick a date for the meeting, which would normally be the change of council, but it will not be a change of council, obviously, but we will do all our appointments, our office appointments, our liaison appointments, and if we would not do that at the normal time frame, we may run into some vacations, we may run into some personal, and we should all be here. Because we're also planning to have a gathering after that meeting, which will be open to the general public as well.
I'll make a motion that we have it on the evening of the 9th of December.
The 9th?
It's a Monday.
Monday the 9th. Does Monday the 9th work for the rest of you? You're okay with that?
That's fine. Yes, sir.
You're okay? How about you, Joseph?
We beat Carolina Beach. Yeah, that's fine.
I'll second.
Okay. All in. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. We will meet on the 9th for the swearing-in ceremony and the assignment of liaison positions. Okay. Concerns on coyote sightings. I think, Mr. Ellen, we have assigned that to you as our coyote commissioner.
That's part of the problem. We, the commissioners and myself, the mayor, have had a few phone calls and a few emails regarding residents' concerns over sightings of coyotes. Also, there's phone calls and emails to the town council of Carolina Beach, and I'm sure most of you have read or at least talked to your neighbors about the coyote issue down on Baldhead Island. So I'm going to talk about coyotes for a few minutes. About the coyotes, are they a menace to humans, the environment that they like being in, how you can hunt and trap them, and how to get a permit. So if you will hold your questions maybe to the end, and then you can ask me some questions. Okay, coyotes, there's a picture of one. They are smart and very adaptable. I'm not going to read to you all these words, particularly how they look, but they are smart critters, animals, wild animals, and they adapt to their environment. They come and go. They have somewhat of a social network, not quite as social as other wild animals, but they are smart and will adapt. The third bullet, coyotes are opportunistic omnivores eating what's available. And the second sub-bullet, they eat anything that has calories. It's not just that they hunt other small rodents as wild, you know, for prey. They'll eat the fruit off the bottom of the ground. If you have an apple tree in your yard, pear, or whatever, and it drops fruit, coyotes will come eat the fruit. They'll eat pet food if you leave it out. They'll drink the water if you leave it out for your cats and dogs. And they will attack small animals. Long list here, mice, rabbits, squirrels, even frogs and lizards, I found interesting. And dogs and cats. Deer, one of the favorite things that trappers use is some old stale deer meat to put in a trap. So they do like deer. Able to jump a 6-foot fence, so can't really keep them out of your yard very well. They are famous for their wide repertoire of sounds, and I think even the Latin name for a coyote comes from the Latin words for barking dogs. So. Do we have a menace to humans themselves? They don't typically attack humans. Even small children are not attacked normally by coyotes. They will go after your small pets if they're left out, and particularly unattended. They view the large dogs as rivals and the, like I say, small dogs, the animals, as prey. When they live close to us, they tend to hunt at night. They will hunt some in the morning if they don't find enough food at night, but they're not normally seen during the day, unless their food source kind of dries up, and then they do get more ambitious, would be out during the day. They mate in January, March. That means the pups are born April and May, and then the parents take care of the pups through the summer, and then as the pups get old enough to start hunting for themselves and become young adults, and that's why we're seeing more of the coyotes right now in the October, November, December time frame, is because those young ones are now out hunting also, but they're also moving out of their parents' area. So they will tend to go find their own territory to set up their own families, that type of thing. Now back to the concerns of the residents and things. We had, the mayor and I, went to a joint meeting of he and I, the some folks from Carolina Beach Council, some folks from Matsu, two gentlemen that work for the North Carolina Wildlife Association, or not association, but the commission, and then the gentleman who is the chief wildlife officer from Carolina Beach Marine. So we had a nice chat about the situation and things that could be done. Down here at the bottom, the coyote attacks. In a 45-year period, 367 documented attacks throughout the U.S. Again, documented, so there may have been more. But only two of that 367 attacks were actually fatal to people over a 45-year period. Well, in comparison to that, 4.5 million dog bites annually, not in that same 45-year period, but annually, 4.5 million dog bites. And in just 1 year, 2016, 31 people died from dog bites. So, I am a math guy, but, you know, liars will use statistics for whatever they want. But the statistics would tell you that dogs are a lot worse menace to humans than coyotes are. The environment, of course, we have a very attractive environment for coyotes. The forest, they do live alone and travel only in small packs. You won't see like a big pack try to take down a deer or something. Onesie, twosies, if you see them more than one at a time. Would be very few. Again, they adjust their hunting style to the food that's available and mate, and then the pups start hunting. So how can we coexist? Keeping small pets indoors or in the close presence of an adult. Remove potential food sources from your yard. They are also attracted to animal feces. So if you have a place where deer walk through and you notice deer feces in your yard, or other cats and dogs are using your yard to do that, then you need to clean it up because the coyotes will be attracted to those scents. Remind children to avoid dense vegetation. And hazing is very effective. The Wildlife Commission gentleman and the gentleman from the port said you wouldn't necessarily think so, but hazing coyotes is very effective. If you see one, you walk out here and there's one walking by your car, loud noises, screams, even run at them, they will go away. You can, you know, you can Google on it, I guess, but you can make a noisemaker carry it with you. You can use the hose, the spray, water, those pump water guns that the kids have. We teased around up at our Carolina Beach meeting about using a paintball gun, and we were trying to decide, should we have different color paint for the two towns so we know who is which. Okay, hunting trap. There is no closed season on coyotes on private property. From the hours of half an hour before sunrise, half an hour after sunset. And what I mean by no closed season, that means it's fully an open season. Every day of the year, coyotes can be taken. However, the town of Kiri Beach has an ordinance against firing a weapon in the town limits. So you can't shoot these guys. If you catch one, you can kill him. He might bite you. You do need a hunting permit if you're going to hunt. There's no bag limit, even though it's open season. You can do two or three a day, four or five a month. However many get caught and killed, that would be, there's no set limit against it. As it says, for the most part, state laws allow you to shoot them, but we can't shoot them in Kiri Beach. You do need a hunting license. Most coyote kills are incidental, meaning the hunter was out hunting for something else, came across a coyote, and then shot it. The season is open year-round. Now, trapping, different from hunting, trapping is only open from December the 1st to February the 28th. So those 3 months, December, January, February, you are allowed to trap a coyote on your private property, and you must get a depredation permit from the Wildlife Commission. So how do you do that? There's some information there. But the permit authorizes you to capture or kill a wild animal to reduce damage caused by these animals or to protect other interests, human health, and safety on your property. To obtain a permit, there's the wildlife officer, enforcement officer, and it's only good for your piece of property. If you get a permit, you have a coyote trap, that's good for your address. You can't take that trap and move it over to your neighbor's, or if your neighbor wants one, or you want your neighbor to also have a trap, you both must get a permit for your piece of property. Now the traps are soft catch, leg. They also make a cage type, but they're very ineffective. Much more effective to have the clamp type that will capture the foot and hold the coyote, and that's also humane, does not damage the coyote. But it is against the law to trap coyotes and move them somewhere else. So, if you want it off your yard, and you think you see it enough that you go through this process of getting a Wildlife Commission permit, and there are people that are certified to come set up the traps and check them every day and all that, that coyote will get killed because you can't move it out to the western part of the state, or you can't move it over to somewhere else. Gotta think about that part. But you can have it trapped and removed. The wildlife person would tell you what he's going to do with it, I suppose. Okay. Before he starts the questions, there's a lot of literature available. The Humane Society has a 20-page booklet on solving problems with coyotes. Very detailed. Very good. The Wildlife Resources Commission, Preventing Conflict,
with coyotes and how to coexist with coyotes. You can print these things off your computer. They also, the Wildlife Commission had a one-pager regarding, this is kind of the time that you're going to see more coyotes because of the pups leaving and the adults getting ready to mate again. In this past year, I've got the top six counties here in North Carolina. New Hanover was the fifth highest county in the state in sightings that are documented. And I know some of you folks have either emailed us or called. That wouldn't be in the statistic. This would be people that have called the Wildlife Commission and documented the fact that they have seen the coyotes. Anyway, last year in New Hanover County, there was
documented. So we're also the smallest county, most densely populated.
Now, you may have a lot of questions for me about what's going on down at Baldhead. You saw the newspaper that said the coyotes were disturbing the turtle nestings, and they have implemented a program to trap coyotes. Also online, coyote management plan for Baldhead Island. Very detailed. Well, not very detailed, but it shows you some of the pictures of the turtle nesting that have been disturbed, some of the traps they're using. But at the end, it was interesting to me. It had a question and answer. You could send in a question. One person said, why are we choosing winners and losers? The turtles being the winners and the coyotes being the losers. They're both wild animals, so whatever. Baldhead Island does not trap or kill foxes, and yet they also disturb the turtle nest, but we're getting ready to trap and kill coyotes. Was there an environmental impact assessment performed? And no, there wasn't. And it's not required to be since these are wild animals. Also, has anyone been hurt on Baldhead Island by a coyote? The answer was no. So all these resources are available through your computer, or call me or email me or see me in the neighborhood and I will print some of these out and make them available. Questions?
Tell me, what is Mutsu's position on addressing coyotes?
They're not going to do anything over here in our buffer zone. They're not going to put out any traps in the buffer zone. And if we remove some, I would dare say it's as smart and adaptable as those guys are, coyotes are, they'll come out of the buffer zone and replenish where we got rid of them in our town. And I think that's going to happen in Baldhead. You know, we call that Baldhead Island, but it's actually attached. It's not an island you can go all the way around. And I think coyotes will continue to move down that way from up here as they remove them on that island.
Yes. John, I think we can all say that the population's increased on the island. Certainly has since I've lived here. I lived the prior house, my current house, right next to the monsoon land. And, you know, I didn't see coyotes until about 3 or 4 years ago. Now I see them probably had in the last year six sightings just at the end of my street or walking along. I think the population is increasing. Is Matsu going to track this problem over time, or is it something reviewed periodically, or is it just something saying, well, that's the way it is, we're not going to do anything? Because the population is going to continue to expand in all that wide open area.
I don't know if I can buy into that totally, Dennis, because from my research,
they don't get, they're not going to overpopulate themselves. They have territory, and I agree with you that there's certainly more sightings, so this gentleman and I are getting more phone calls and emails about it, and the fact that we're having these meetings. But no, right now, Matsu is not planning to study it or put traps over there in their buffer area or in the buffer area, but closer to our homes that, you know, start getting close to the buffer area. We are not finished with Carolina Matsu and Kuru deciding on a full management plan. That is part of our goal, to have an island management plan. Since this is kind of the season for them, I wanted to get some initial information out to people.
They strongly recommended, Dennis, that we harass. They said if you harass the animals, they won't come here. They'll stay on that part. I mean, I don't know what the truth is on that, but they did say if you harass them and make it a place they're not welcome, and they know they're not welcome, they will not. They will avoid us.
This was addressed in the joint land use study plan with Matsu, and we brought it up in one of the meetings, and it was just, they're not going to do anything.
Right.
I mean, they're not going to get involved in it.
I don't have any problems harassing coyotes and keeping them alive.
We should form a committee.
My point is that this is, I think, needs to be studied. And I think Matsu, you know, controlling, what percentage of this island does Matsu control? Half of it? More than half? I don't know. But given the increase, and I'm convinced there's been an increase in the number of coyotes, I don't know when they reach a plateau, when they reach, you know, equilibrium, okay, on the island. But my sense is it's the population's grown. And therefore, I think it warrants someone paying attention to it, studying the problem, to see if we do have to do something. And I think it's Matsu that really is responsible, because that, you know, uncontrolled wild, you know, buffer zone is prime habitat for coyotes. And they use the residential areas as a feeding ground. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not in the residential areas during the day. They're not in there in the evening. It's nighttime. I've got doorbell camera footage of coyotes walking in front of my front door. So I just think it's increasing, and I just want to encourage the town, or, you know, Joseph, you're in touch with them, you know, to you know, consider doing a study, or, you know, a prolonged period of time to see, is this population increasing, and can we do anything at some point in the future?
Great. Yeah. John, you know, before moving to North Carolina, I was a city council member in a town in Southern California. About 95% of coyote attacks occur in Southern California within about a 20-mile radius of where I lived and was a council member. And so I was very actively involved in coyotes and know them pretty well. And the starting point, almost all attacks are from individual coyotes that are emboldened for whatever reason. Either they're used to feeding, you know, maybe they have a disease or they're getting sick or something like that. What I would strongly recommend, because I saw a coyote last night on Southern Road, I was walking my dog and there was a coyote 20 feet away from me. What I would recommend is that when folks call in with sightings and encourage them to call in, keep track of that, but understand that all of California now uses a four-stage level of sightings. Is that when you ask if it's a sighting, did the coyote run away? Like the one last night, ran away like I expect them to. Do they stand? Not moving backwards or forwards. That would be a stage two. Stage three would be moving towards you, and stage four would actually be an attack. And what you find is that as long as it's a stage one and they run away, and hazing does work, I mean, there's no question about it. As long as it's a stage one, there's not a problem, you don't have to worry about it. Once you start getting more stage two and stage threes, then it's more likely an individual coyote that's doing this. Typically, the sightings of stage two or stage three are going to be in one location, so you can actually trap that particular coyote. But I would strongly recommend that when somebody calls in, you identify, you ask them specifically, what did the coyote do? And as long as they run away, it's not a problem. It's just not a problem. But boy, if they start to stand there, or even worse, even start to approach you if you're out there with a dog or a kid or an individual, that's when you have to start getting worried about it.
Well, Robbie and I use our deck a lot in the front of the house, and we've seen coyotes at, I would say, usually 10 o'clock or later,
right,
come down through the side yard and walk on across the street or go around, and it might be a week later that we see another one. I don't know if that's the same one or not, but I have. We've seen coyotes two or three times. The scale you're talking about is in this pamphlet.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Coyotes weren't on the side of one, two, or the stages, and what to do with that. So.
But I think starting to keep a record of that, right, and maybe even plot it on a map would be very, very useful.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Just one item. I don't see where there's a problem. All of the information here doesn't indicate, quote unquote, a problem. I see coyotes pretty much every day. They're part of the environment. Unless you can establish a problem, don't make one up. There's a book that was written in 1975, a long time ago, long before coyotes ever came into North Carolina. God's Dog. Interesting book. If anybody's interested, you can, you know, go to Amazon and pick it up. Have my copy. Remarkable animals. And they're part of the environment. It's a kindred spirit. Unless you can identify a problem, and the statistics are, you know, show you just the opposite. Just the opposite. They don't want any part of you. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you. All right, now we move on to another interesting part of the day. Miss Avery, would you stand up? I don't, is that a tiara?
Yes. I was crowned yesterday.
Well, Miss Avery, we're about to move into the room over here to do a little honoring, but I thought before we do that, we should mention that you've given us 12 years of tremendous service. You served Mayor Fuller, Mayor Mack, Mayor Dean, Mayor Emily, and now me. I'm not going to ask you to put them in any specific order.
Yes, please, thank
you. But I would tell you that through this all, you pushed us to put this structure up. Almost single-handedly, you pushed us. How long did that take? About 5 years?
5 years.
Yeah, okay. So we are pleased that it's accomplished, and I believe that so a lot of that has to do with what you have done, your philosophy to make things right, your philosophy to get them done, and then worry about it later, kind of. So, any of you gentlemen have anything you want to say to Nancy before we go in there and do some presentations?
I was going to say things to her personally, but I'll publicly say from Bobby and my perspective, working with Nancy the 6 years we've been in full time has been absolutely marvelous. And what a joy to work with in putting together the reception for the new building itself. Mm-hmm. Nancy was that.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to say, Nancy, great job. We're definitely going to miss you. You did a good job training your department. And for those of you that didn't get to stay through Florence, the reason you knew what was going on was probably Nancy. So she moved everybody out of trailers. Got her department squared away and got the town squared away, and then left town, fortunately for us, so that she could then be our communication hub. So all the emails that you saw, all the updates during Florence, were really what Nancy did. I mean, she helped us write them, so if they sounded really professional, that's probably her ghostwriting. Craig and my names were on them, most of them, or some of the council for some of the others, but really she's what got them to you guys when we didn't have anything. We were calling her from Carolina Beach and dictating. She was typing in a hotel room. And then, like Craig said, she has definitely been a great resource for multiple councils. And I'm sure we're tough to deal with as a group, not just these five, but the others before these five. And she's done a great job, done it with a good sense of humor. She's definitely dealt with our citizens really well because they can be difficult to, none of you guys probably, but some of the other ones.
Absolutely.
But they can be very difficult to deal with as well. And I've never heard a citizen complain about how she or her department dealt with them. They complain about the issues maybe, but not about how they were treated by town hall. So great job. We're going to miss you for sure. Hope you enjoy it.
Joseph.
Every time I called or texted or emailed, no matter 8 a.m. on a Sunday, 10 o'clock on a Friday, Nancy answered. So I, especially 4 years ago when I was new to this and definitely felt very green and inexperienced and needing to catch up rapidly, she was always a great resource, and I will miss that a great deal. And your humor.
You finished?
I'm quite as long-winded as David.
You know, I met Nancy probably within the first week or two I was here, and I think I had a job in the first week or two and a day of something to do for the town. I've worked with a lot of people in local government over the years, and Nancy by far functions and operates the town in a way that all of us would be proud to have. And I think Mandy will do a great job for us, but I think Mandy has big shoes to fill, Nancy, and we appreciate what you've done for us.
Okay, let's.
May I?
Okay. You want to say something? Maybe we better cut the mics.
Yeah, I'll make it short and sweet. Thank you to this council and the former council for it's been a privilege to serve. It has been almost 12 years, not quite. I love the town, I always have. I used to come here as a kid, so it's kind of a special place for me. I also want to say that I'm very pleased that council did promote Mandy Sanders. She's been with the town 10 years, 5 years in finance, 5 years in admin, and then deputy clerk. Very smart, very talented, capable, and certainly qualified to take over. And I want to thank our staff, Beth and Meredith, who's with us tonight, for all their hard work that made this last year much easier with all the transition back from the trailerhood that we made, you know, pretty much put together and back into this facility. So I thank you. I have full faith and confidence that they'll continue on the excellent service that you have and the good treatment of our citizens. I think that's it. It's been great.
Well, then why don't we all recess into the conference room? We're going to come back because we're going to give her some things that should be part of the record.
I forgot my department head.
Okay.
My co-workers, you guys have been great. Best for the people I've ever worked with. You've made it easy and I appreciate the laughter. Okay,
you ready? Okay, come on.
Make a motion to recess.
All in favor?
Second.
Second. Aye.
Okay, we have a motion to return and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Gentlemen, that brings conclusion this month's town council meeting. May I have a motion to adjourn? Commissioner
items. Good try.
Cut that. Okay, Commissioner items.
We have to redo our land use plan by the end of next year. So I'm proposing we form a land use plan committee. It'll be made up of myself, Alan Oliver. He has worked with some of these in the past at his prior jobs. Chairman Galbraith of the P&Z. We're going to put Tony Garraby on there because of his extensive experience with the Board of Adjustments. And John Batts and his staff. We will also open up the applications for two citizens to be on it to give as fair representation as we can. My biggest issue with this, especially with the other stuff that P&Z is going to deal with next year, is we get into a crunch towards the end of the year, we have a hurricane, something like that, and I'm kind of want to go ahead and get this started. We miss time for any type of storm, closure, anything. We can wrap this up as rapidly as possible. So we will meet. I'll send emails out tomorrow to everyone, because we have to set days. The day of the week that we meet is a formal town committee, but I'll handle all that tomorrow. But I need y'all's approval to start the process.
So I make a motion we approve the
formation.
The formation of a land use plan committee and allow Commissioner Whitley to lead the efforts and bring it back to council once we get citizens' input so we can formally designate it. Because you have to designate all the members, right?
Yes.
So we'll have to wait.
Yes.
So for him to advertise, put down staff.
I'll second.
Okay, motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
And I have
go. Yes, sir.
We had an MPO today.
Yes.
This afternoon. Last month, Abby Lorenzo gave us a presentation on other ways to raise money to pay for transportation needs.
Yes.
And of course, in the document, finally come out with their new five-year plan, a 25-year plan, but it rolls 5 years. There's a list of things that meet within the budget constraint, and then she was presenting ways to get more money to put more projects in that list. And I sent all that email saying which one of those different tax initiatives, registration fees, and things would you support. Well, we met today, and what the MPO voted on out of all of those, we would only support as an MPO is of the new Cape Fear River crossing allowed tolls.
Allowed tolls.
Allowed.
Okay. Okay.
But none of those other taxes and fees were supported by the MPO.
Okay.
And I did learn.
Thank goodness.
That in the state of North Carolina, you can only impose tolls on new roads and bridges, mm-hmm. and things like that.
So we can never put one on I-95.
On existing,
sure.
things you can't. Now you've got a two-lane road and add a lane, mm-hmm. you can toll that lane.
Yes. Okay. Or you'd go around the city and like 495 or 295 or something can do
that's
that.
That's why they did a 74 bypass, mm-hmm. around Charlotte.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Worked quite well too.
I've got one thing for sure.
Yes.
Last month at the Ports and Waterways Commission, we heard a presentation on the shoreline mapping program. It's a big document. It's in John Batson's office. Anybody like to delve into it? Mm-hmm. If y'all, I don't know if y'all received the emails from Layton or not, but I'll forward that to you with the PowerPoint presentation. And it's got some of the stuff like Fort Fisher and Curry Beach and what we annually lose in sand and what we lose in storms and stuff. So it's some neat stuff, and I'll send it to you if you want to delve into it.
Yes, please. Sure.
Okay. Anything else? Mayor has no items today.
Make a motion we adjourn.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.